mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
Mouth. From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. For four decades, Dr. Gerald Cohen has pored over documents and texts and popular culture to study etymology, the history and origins of words, and how their meanings change over time. Working with the world's top language historians, Dr. Cohen publishes Comments on Etymology, a sort of written conversation on the origins of words and phrases like brainstorm and hot dog. It can't be found online or even at university libraries, and its circulation is under 100, and it's published on paper. Dr. Gerald Cohen is professor in the Department of Arts, Languages, and Philosophy at the Missouri University of Science and Technology. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
How do you decide on which word you want to look at?
Oh, there's just a variety of things that I'm looking at, and if something looks interesting, then I'll pick it up and run with it. And so it's the sort of thing where if somebody is an engineer or a scientist, they will hit their peak in their 20s or their 30s, meaning that that's when they're doing their most creative work. In something like etymology, somebody's really not prepared for that until, let's say, they're in their 50s. It doesn't mean that somebody can't do some very good work in the meantime, but the field is so colossally broad that one lifetime isn't really enough.
Hmm. Walk us through your process for finding the origins of a word or a turn of phrase. Why don't we take the word jazz, which I know you've written about, and I thought was a sexual term that was adapted by early 20th century music. Comments on Etymology, I read, finds that it was a baseball term. Now, how did you come to that?
Okay, well, first, I was not the one who discovered that. There was a man by the name of Peter Tammany. He was not an academic, but he devoted his life to studying words, Americanisms. And he was the one who then wrote and said, hey, this had been a baseball term in California, specifically in San Francisco. There was a team called the San Francisco Seals. And the term jazz there was used to mean pep, vim, vigor, fighting spirit.
Hmm.
So in other words, the San Francisco Seals sports writer who was using the term, he realized the team did not look very good on paper, and he was trying to encourage them. So, yes, it's true, you know, that they were a bit weak, but they had the jazz, the fighting spirit, the energy, so forth, and that's what would help them to a better season than they had the previous year, which had been dismal.
Well, I want to let listeners know that you have 167 pages devoted to jazz, a lot of backs and forths. Now, I remember this, and there's one commenter mentioning jazz musician Wynton Marsalis from Ken Burns' jazz series. Here is Marsalis explaining it as far as he knows.
It used to be J-A-S-S, and, you know, you scratch the J off and it would just say ass. So they changed to J-A-Z-Z. But I think that the original meaning of jazz was procreation, and you can't get no more deeper, profounder than that unless you're contemplating the creator.
So Wynton Marsalis becomes a kind of footnote in your comments, part of the conversation. Now, do you consider someone like him to be propagating an error by misquoting what the origins of jazz, or taking it in a new direction, and this is just how language evolves?
Well, it turns out that for the origin of jazz, there must be, oh, I'm just guessing, maybe about 18 or 19 different guesses as to where the term came from. Now, Wynton Marsalis, when you deal with the great jazz musicians, it's necessary to distinguish between their ability and music. And there, that is tremendous. So these are absolutely the top. And their ability in etymology. And there it is much weaker. These are not etymologists. Normally, they don't give a whole lot of thought to it. And so the fact that he might have picked up an incorrect etymology and then spread it a bit in the movie, that's not at all surprising.
Once a scholar arrives at an origin story, what does it take to be accepted by the academic community? Does there tend to be a lot of debate over the findings?
So at the moment, since we have the Internet, which is absolutely wonderful, there's a group called the American Dialect Society. It has about 400, 450 members. If somebody has an idea, they can run it by. If they have found a new attestation they think it's important, they could run it by. And then you have a lot of people instantly looking at it. And usually this couple who have a particular interest in any particular item which is put out there. And if they like it, they'll say, hey, congratulations. And if they don't like it, they are not at all bashful about saying so.
Go through a couple more words, if you don't mind. Brainstorm had a pretty interesting story behind it. How has the meaning of that word changed since its origin?
Well, brainstorm was originally, it was originally a medical term in psychology. And now it sounds sort of amusing, but they took it seriously. And this was in the 19th century or into at least the early 20th century. And it meant there was such an explosion of mental activity that somebody could go and do something which would be totally unacceptable, like murdering somebody. Hmm. So it was used in trials as a plea for temporary insanity. Now, in this particular term, went from obscurity to what was the murder of the century. And this was back in 1907. And what had happened was there were two socialites. And one was Harry Thaw, and the other one was Stanford White.
Yeah, he was a great architect. He was the designer of the original Madison Square Garden before it was torn down.
Yes, and Stanford White had had an affair with a woman who later became Harry Thaw's wife. And he had not only had an affair with her, but he had somehow taken advantage of her sexually the first time. And this thing was really bugging Harry Thaw. So one night at the theater, he shot him. He murdered him. So this was not a whodunit. There must have been 200 people, 200 witnesses to the thing. So there was a trial. And the lawyers for Harry Thaw wanted to plead temporary insanity. And so they pleaded by saying that he had had a brainstorm. In other words, there was so much mental activity out of control in his brain that that's why he did it, and therefore he wasn't legally responsible. Meanwhile, the cartoonist, humorist, had gotten a hold of the term brainstorm, and that struck them as absolutely hilarious. So there were all sorts of cartoons with people having brainstorms, and that's what brought the term into the language. So I tell my students what the moral of the story is. And the moral of the story is that if you're going to commit murder, make sure you come from a very, very wealthy family. Because otherwise, you are toast.
Our guest is Gerald Cohen. He's professor in the Department of Arts, Languages, and Philosophy at the Missouri University of Science Technology. You are co-author of an entire book with Barry Popick and the late David Shulman on the origins of some words, including the one hot dog. Can you give us the Reader's Digest version?
Okay, now for the origin term itself, the basic thing we deal here is the belief in the 19th century and into the early 20th century that dog meat could turn up in sausages. And as a matter of fact, it sometimes did turn up. Now, this was scandalous. It certainly did not happen all the time. But throughout the 19th century, there were periodically scandals where they would find that butchers would be having dog meat in their sausages. The term had a very limited use starting in the 1880s, but in 1894 and 1895, it got picked up by the students at Yale. And the term immediately became popular at Yale. From Yale, it spread to other universities. And so by 1900, it had become a standard term in college slang. Meanwhile, at Coney Island, which was, you may say, the natural habitat of the hot dog, they avoided the term like the plague. They absolutely refused to accept hot dog because it sounded a bit disgusting. It sounded like, you know, you're actually eating some dog meat. And they would call it red hot, Frankfurters, Franks. but absolutely not hot dog, even though the term was gradually being accepted elsewhere throughout the country. And finally, they threw in the towel. The term had become so widespread and accepted that even at Coney Island, they were using it.
How about buck, as in he owes me $4?
Okay, the buck comes from buckskin. And this goes, and you have to give credit to a scholar by the name of Stephen Goranson, who had pointed this out. And it goes back to the price of the skins of the animals in the 19th century. A muskrat skin was worth 25 cents, which, of course, was a lot more in those days than now. A raccoon skin was a third of a dollar. A doe skin was 50 cents. And a buck skin was the almighty dollar.
Gerald Cohen, you are just a font of entertaining information. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for your interest.
Gerald Cohen is professor in the Department of Arts, Languages, and Philosophy at the Missouri University of Science and Technology. He publishes Comments on Etymology. You can find out more at wordofmouthradio.org. After the break, the unusual lengths one doctor took to have a child, including undergoing psychic surgery. Stay with us for that story when Word of Mouth continues.